Gambling with an Edge, with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Joe Navarro, former FBI agent who's made a career out of reading and interpreting nonverbal communications. We'll be talking to Joe in a few minutes. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com asking us about a blackjack game. One casino normally cuts off a full deck from a two-deck game with decent rules. Not interesting. One dealer, however, was dealing down to about 10 cards. Our hero sat down, spread very large, and played until the pit boss told the dealer to start cutting off one deck. On his way out of the casino, the other player, who had been at the same table, comes up to him and says, "Thanks for ruining the game, asshole." Polite conversation. So he wants to know from Richard, did he do the right thing? Well, this is before the conversation. Nothing untoward happened after that pleasantry. He wasn't planning on coming back. He thought it was a mistake that would soon be corrected, so he wanted to get while the getting is good.
It's hard to know. I mean, first of all, he should have known that that was another card counter sitting at the table with him. And it didn't sound like he was aware of that until the guy accosted him in the parking lot. It sounds to me like he used way too big a spread. But without being there and being able to see what happened, I mean, you don't know whether the boss happened to come by and correct that, you know, on his own anyway. But it does sound like he was probably spreading way too much. And again, it really depends on how much he was betting in relation to the other guy. I know I had incidents, similar kinds of things happened to me where the other guy was betting nickels and I was betting blacks, and I was certainly irritated when they did something that I considered to be boneheaded and it, you know, ruined a good game. So my guess is, did he do something wrong? Probably. He probably spread too much or was too obvious in his card counting. But
all right,
hard to say for sure.
Let's talk to our guest. Joe Navarro has worked for the FBI and now has a career about reading body language. Written 10 books on it, has a column in Psychology Today. Joe Navarro, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
It's great to be here.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, why don't you spend a couple minutes telling us what experience you have that qualifies you as an expert in the field of interpreting nonverbal communication?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. And, every time I hear the word expert, I sort of cringe because I know so many other giants out there like Desmond Morris and David Givens who are really great at this. But for 25 years, I was with the FBI. I was involved in a behavioral program the Bureau had in the area of national security, where we basically looked at the behavior of spies to see if we could find out what they were up to, who they were dealing with, and so forth, and gradually developed expertise in nonverbal communications. I became the Bureau's expert on, in essence, body language. And when I retired in 2003, I went out in the world and started teaching folks, not even in the poker area, but in business about body language. And then just just on a whim, Phil Hellmuth read one of my articles in Psychology Today and said, I'd like to meet you. And that was it.
So in conjunction with Phil, you wrote a book called Read 'Em and Reap. And
I did, after much cajoling. I actually didn't want to write it. I felt that I should write about body language, but in a poker setting that really wasn't my realm. But he pushed it, and after 2 years, convinced me to go ahead and hook up with Marvin Carlins, who had written about poker and poker players, and so I did.
And do you play poker as well, or did you take up the game to some degree to get better at it?
I did. I had to. I went to my personal doctor, and he's a poker player, and he said, "All right, if you're going out to Vegas, you got to learn at least how to read cards." I grew up in a very religious home, very Catholic, and my father didn't really want us playing games of chance, and
except bingo.
So I had to learn about the cards and so forth. But actually, what was fascinating to me was, and the only reason that I did it was I saw absolutely no difference in human behavior between what I saw in the poker room or poker, you know, at the tables versus what you would see with individuals that you're interviewing, and there's varying degrees of stress. And when I saw that there was no discrepancy, and obviously you're dealing with the human brain, I said I can do this, even though I'm really not a very good poker player.
I find it curious that you went to your doctor who told you what to do, because part of all poker players know they're never supposed to play with a guy named Doc. I mean, that's just one of the rules of the road. But
well, I knew that he played every once a month. You know, I knew that he and a bunch of his buddies got together, and in fact, I ended up writing. At the time, I did some articles for Bluff Magazine. They were very kind, and I wrote about this group of individuals, and you just can't even believe some of the things that came out of their mouths. But I learned a lot. I learned about poker. And one of the interesting things I found was that when it comes to behavior, it wasn't so much how much money was at stake. What really mattered was how interested the players were in either winning or losing. And they could be playing for dimes, and we would still see some of the behaviors of anxiety and concern and dislike and so forth. It was a great learning experience. I have two notebook fulls of notes that I collected from Las Vegas and at Atlantic City, and someday I may end up publishing the rest of the notes in there.
So can you talk about what some of those common signals of anxiety are?
Yeah, so one of the things that I found was, and it's the same in real life, is people are fairly much transmitting comfort and discomfort at all times. You're either comfortable or you're, you know, everything is good or there's something bothering you. And the way we manifest that is usually through the body. Nobody sits at the table and says, "Boy, I'm just irritable." You know, we start pulling on our shirt. We ventilate our jackets. We run our fingers through our hair. We compress our lips or bite our lips, or we do that bunny nose thing where we wrinkle the nose upward.
Richard,
which, by
just
the way,
did that,
is
by
about
the way.
80% accurate in poker, that somebody just absolutely hates their hand. And so these same tells, you know, I've seen thousands of times in interviews when you ask somebody a question and And all of a sudden you say, you know, where'd you go to high school? And they say, well, I went to Biltmore High School. That's great. And then you say, were you home last night? And then you see these displays of discomfort and you say, why am I seeing this behavior? Why the discomfort display? And you see the same thing in poker. The flop comes around and all of a sudden you see all this, all these behaviors indicative of discomfort. And, you know, the person is either going to fold or they're marginal. They're marginal or weak. And, you know, the body reveals what's going on in the mind.
Or they're faking it.
Or they're faking it. And one of the things that I found was immediately after Read 'Em and Reap came out, how many poker players, at that time I was doing 4 events for the WSOP Academy. I don't think it exists anymore, out in Vegas. And one of the things I started to notice, because I used to spend 2-3 hours a night with my notebook. A lot of people saw me there at the tables. Is people beginning to try to fake using some of the same things? Like, I'll give you an example. When we're very confident, we tend to steeple, and steepling is where we put our fingertips together. We look like Mr. Nice Guy on Shark Tank, right? So or Mr. Burns on that show. Steepling is a sign of confidence, and one of the things that I started to notice was players who were doing it, but I could tell they were faking it because confidence displays usually manifest very quickly. And what I was seeing is these players would look at their hole cards, they would look at what's on the table, and then you would see this delayed steepling. And I still see some of that. Now, some of the great players, they know how to fake very well. They already are, you know, positioning themselves to say, okay, at this point, I'm going to ventilate my my jacket, or I'm going to bite my lip real quick, and hopefully somebody will think that I'm weak.
One of the common ones talked about that I'm not sure if it came from your book. I think it did. Is the covering your mouth, that people who cover their mouth are often not telling the truth.
Well, it didn't come from me, but one of the things that I taught, and you'll see Phil Hellmuth to this day using it, is one of the things that I said was, if you hide in the open, the way the brain works, it reacts to movement, it reacts to activity. And if you hold very still, the brain becomes disengaged. And so if you're in the pot, one of the things that I worked with Phil on was just hold very still. Just cover your mouth by bringing your hands together in front of your mouth, tuck the thumbs underneath so that they don't accidentally pop out. Because a lot of times when we are feeling confident and strong, our thumbs tend to separate from the index finger. I'll talk about that in a minute. But to cover your mouth, and to just stare ahead. And what happens is the brain has an orientation reflex, and it will orient on whatever is happening at the table. And if there's any other movement, it will be distracted. So you can basically hide in the open and not be noticed. What I did say about the hands is when you ask a player a question and his hands are in front of his mouth, and they're hesitant to unveil, right? So they're hesitant to come around and look at you and to move the hand away. That hesitation to unveil is usually a sign of weakness. It's about 76-77% accurate.
When you describe that two hands up covering the mouth, immediately it brought to mind Chris Ferguson. It seemed like every single bet he makes, he seems to assume that posture.
Well, a lot of them did because it worked. it took on a life of its own. I mean, this is one of the things that I was teaching at the time, that your face is going to reveal sentiments, whether you like it or not. For instance, most people don't know what their lips look like unless they stand in front of a mirror. But we know that when you're stressed, blood leaves the lips. And when we're angry, it goes to the arms. And when we're scared, it goes to the legs. But you don't know that. You're sitting there playing. And if you're running out of money and you're stressed about your situation and you've got a rag hand, you're not judging the thickness or fullness of your lips, which you can immediately look at and say, okay, there's some issues here, because you just can't control blood flow. You can't control vasodilation to your skin. You can't control pupillary constriction or dilation. It's just, you just can't do it.
Richard mentioned Chris Ferguson. So back before he went through his disgrace, he has full beard and long hair. Mm-hmm. Would any of that useful for hiding in plain sight?
Yeah, it's you bring up a good question. And actually, with Chris Ferguson, he has a handle. What's the handle they use?
Jesus,
right? One of the things that I noticed with him is that he's so thin. He's one of the few players that actually sits on his leg like Annie Duke. And what I found out was that his best tells were actually on his foot. Not so much from he'd learned to mask his face, but what he couldn't mask was that loose foot that he used to hang out over the chair. And without giving too much away, when he was worried, there were certain things he did with that foot which were extremely accurate. I mean, like in the 90 percentile accuracy. But most people don't pay attention to things like that.
Right, and only one person at the table would be able to see that foot, actually. But
well, that's not accurate, because anytime your foot shakes, it shakes your clothing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so you would see shaking on one side, clothing on one side of the body. I get that remark from everybody. If you the Canadian player
Negreanu,
yeah. Watch Negreanu when he gets happy feet. You don't have to see his feet. You'll see that side of the body. His leg is bouncing like it was a sewing machine, and he's got the nuts.
I'm sure he's happy about you talking about that today.
Well, before I ever talked about it, I made sure that I talked to these players about it. And I said, you're giving this stuff away. I mean, I don't care.
Right, right.
It's not my money, but I made sure that I talked to them and I said, you're doing this thing like Negreanu, if he's got a great hand, his forehead is smooth as a baby's forehead. But boy, oh boy, the minute he's struggling with something, if he's weak or marginal, you begin to see furrowing of the forehead and, slight squinting of the eyes. I mean, he knows this. Hmm.
In general, are men or women more readable?
Well, that's a tough one. Well, we know from research that, and obviously for biological reasons, and I as a father can attest to this, women in every study that's ever done are better at picking up tells. Now, they may not know the names and so forth like I do, but they're usually better at it. And they have to, because when a baby is born, the baby is communicating first by noise, then tactile, then nonverbals, and maybe a year later they become vocal. For a lot of guys, myself included, that those first 6 months, I was clueless as to what my child needed. And I study this stuff. So we know that they're better at it. The question is it applied equally in games and so forth? Nobody has done any studies on it. I've run into a lot of players who just intuitively are great readers of nonverbals. But I would have to say that whether it's men or women, the biggest folly that I saw, and I haven't taught a poker school in years now, was the failure to observe the whole body and to just focus on the face. Every book that I seemed to see and everybody I talked to seemed to focus on the face, or maybe, you know, how they handle the chips if they knocked them over. But nobody talked about the fact that when we're strong, when we're confident, the space between our fingers widens. It's a territorial displays. And the fact that when we're weak or scared or concerned, that we tend to keep our fingers together, and to the point that when we really fear something or we're bluffing, we tend to hide our thumbs underneath our hands. I was just shocked that nobody had observed that. And I had observed it almost every night, you know, walking around, or that they never looked at ventilating behaviors. And that is where, you know, the flop comes out, or somebody raises and, you know, whoever's up pulls on their jacket and ventilates. Well, the human skin responds at 1/250th of a second. The only reason to ventilate is there's some issue. Now, is it because you're weak? Is it because you're marginal? It could go either way. You're not sure. But I was surprised nobody was picking up on those behaviors either. And yet we see them all the time. And here's one. You were asking about men and women. Men and women ventilate differently. Men tend to ventilate by pulling clothing away, or you know, like Rodney Dangerfield used to pull on his collar. Women tend to ventilate by either running fingers lightly through their hair or lifting the hair on the back of the neck up to ventilate, and that's actually very accurate. That so, there's some sort of discomfort.
I think that's sexy too, by the way. But never mind.
Yeah, it is.
so you would need to correlate that ventilation with either strong or weak, depending on that person, right?
You would have to get a baseline on that individual. Look at the environment. Look at what the stimulus is. Did the flop come out? See how many chips they're still holding, and ask yourself, because, you know, basically you are either weak, you are weak and marginal. It could go either way. You've got a fairly good hand, but they might have something else. You could be marginal and strong, or you could be strong, but it's impossible to be both weak and strong at the same time.
Right. So I read a study where they took people and had them only look at the other player's hands.
Yes.
And people were able to do much better at evaluating the other players, whether they were weak or strong, if they only looked at the hands and not at the face at all.
Exactly, and that's why 2/3 of my book, for instance, 200 Poker Tells, I think fully 120 items are below the neck. The hands are very. Here's another thing that happens with the hands, and we don't know it. When there's a really good pot, we have a really good hand, it almost has a gravitational pull, and our hand tends to slide towards the center of the table. And if you carefully watch where people place their hands, whether they cage, I'll give you an example. Resting your hands on your cards versus caging your cards. It takes energy to cage your cards. And so that extra energy, because we're fairly much primed to conserve energy, anytime we're spending energy, it must be important to us. And so that raised hand that cages is telling us something. But at the same time, you know, if you see a player and they grab their whole cards between the middle finger and the thumb, and they start shuttling in front of them to the, you know, back and forth, they're going to fold. And the reason we know this is those are the same two fingers that we use to hold dirty diapers.
I'm not a father. I didn't know which fingers to use.
Don't use your index finger. No. You might need that for whatever.
For picking my teeth. Yes. Yeah. Okay, good.
There you go. But you can see the similitude there. Here we don't like a diaper, so we handle it with those fingers, and here we don't like what we're holding, and so we begin to hold it with the very fingertips, and then we start shuttling them back and forth. That one, by the way, is about, I don't know, we did an estimate back in 2005, and I think that was like 80% accurate that the player was going to fold every time they did that.
How about age?
Age. Well, I'll tell you, now that I'm in my 60s and I've gone from getting adverts for Viagra to adverts for walk-in baths, I can tell you that behavior changes. And
you don't get help by falling and I can't get up.
I get everything. I get that, and I get do I want padded walls and all sorts of things. One of the things that happens is and it has to do with testosterone. The more testosterone we have, the more impulsive we tend to be. We know that from studies done on stock traders. But there's also more mobility, more movement, more action, more looking around, more preening behaviors. You know, at my age, I don't preen as much maybe as I did when I was 30 and a nice looking person walked by. So there's a lot less displaying, and oftentimes, and I've heard a lot of people say this to me, you know, I'm at the table, I'm playing with this gentleman, he's in his 70s, and I can barely read them. And yeah, if you don't know what to look for, it becomes more difficult because the displays are more subtle. And in fact, they're slightly delayed. You may see behaviors that are actually indicative of a pathology. For instance, their hand is shaking not because they're on a monster hand, but because there's some sort of neurological impairment. So you really have to get to know them. But to say that there are no tells there, that's just false. And the same thing goes for cultures. I've had players come to me and say, can you watch this table for a while? I'm playing against this guy. He's either from Vietnam or this gentleman is from China, and I don't know what to look for or whatever. And I, you know, you just shake your head. You're dealing with the human brain, and the human brain only has so many ways of displaying comfort and discomfort, anxieties, intentions, desires, and so forth. What you have to do is unmask how culture affects all of that. But it's all there.
I want to talk about a lot of our listeners are card counters or play table games in the casinos.
Yep.
And for them, it's kind of a different animal. So a scenario that happens quite a bit because, you know, the casinos ask card counters not to play. Sometimes they're very nice and polite about it. Sometimes they're nasty about it.
Even if they're movie stars.
Yes, that's correct. Even if they're movie stars. But a common scenario is a player is sitting at the table, and they look into the pit, and the pit boss and another guy in a suit are looking at them and talking. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes that other guy in the suit comes over, and it's a casino host telling you how happy they are you're there and offering you his business card and asking if he can do anything for you. And the other half of the time, it's, you know, the guy shows up with security guards and tells you to get the hell out. So what can we learn from observing their body language that will help us in making a decision about whether we should leave now or wait for the comp?
Yeah, so
wait for the comp or wait for the cops.
Yeah, you're there. You know, if they approach you and they welcome you and all this stuff, and you're doing really well, they're concerned and they're wondering if just by being nice to you, that'll rattle you enough to go elsewhere or just shake you up a little bit, put you on tilt. You know, the things that I look for are, you know, the pre-indicators of a conspiracy. And what are those? You know, people who look at you too much, people who whisper while they're looking at you too much, people who are trying to hide in the open but fail miserably. It's like, okay, look at this guy over here, and everybody turns. No, not, you know, that sort of thing.
I definitely have noticed that. The other thing I notice is when if they go to the telephone to call either surveillance or the shift manager, they always turn their back to you. If they're talking about you, they turn their back to you.
That's a great tell. They're trying to hide in the open, but they do a terrible job of it. You know, I've only been consulted on this once before, and I what I said is, you know, the easiest way to test something is to see if it scientifically is to see if it happens again. And, you know, if you gather up your things and go to another table, you know, do you see the same cast of funny characters? Having talked to casino organizations, they are very worried about any technique that may be used against them and so forth. And in fact, I was once asked, well, you know, have you ever read, for instance, the other people at the table, or not in poker, but even the card dealer to see if there's anything there? And my answer was, you know, if you're a good observer, you're observing everything. You know, I don't turn it off. If it's within my field of view, I can see it, and it makes you a better observer, that you might pick something up on it. Hey, those are the benefits of being a good observer.
Yeah, in the old days, the dealers used to look at their hole card to see if they had blackjack. They didn't have those little mirror devices, so there were definitely people who were able to take advantage of dealer tells and know when the dealer was pat or stiff.
You're exactly right. In fact, one of the things that used to stand out, one of the old timers told me, was anytime we see something we don't really like, we tend to squint a little bit. Our pupils actually close a little bit too, and that little just drawing together of the eyes, closing of the orbits, it happens very fast. It happens at anywhere from 1/500th to 1/4 of a second, used to give away a lot of clues to let the other players know that something's amiss here.
So also for those players in the casino, things mm-hmm. that they should avoid. One thing I know in particular that the pit people look for is players that are constantly watching the pit, because most gamblers don't care what the pit bosses are doing. So if they see a player who's constantly watching where the pit boss is and what he's doing, that's a tip-off. Are there any other things that players should avoid doing to be so obvious?
Yeah, you can train yourself. You know, one of the things that I learned as an FBI agent is when you're on surveillance, you never make eye contact with the suspect. If you make eye contact, it's done. You can relax the eyes and look elsewhere, whether it's at their feet, at their belt, at their arms, and you still get a good sense of the face and so forth. But to avoid making that eye contact, the more eye contact you make, the more suspicious your you're going to look. Either glance around where you completely go, you know, from left to right or up and down, or you look in the distance, or pick a spot that is not the face. But I can tell you from surveillance, you can follow somebody for a long time just by never making eye contact with them.
Other than not making eye contact, if we wanted to successfully train ourselves to be inscrutable, or like if you taught a class on that, I guess you get a lot of poker players in it. How would we intentionally avoid giving off tells?
Right. So there's two ways. The humans are interesting. When someone is happy and contented and so forth, people look at that and they do a shortcut. They say, oh, there's no issues here. So they move on. So we can act very, very relaxed, but not too relaxed. The other one is the one that I was talking about, where you can basically disappear because there's no movement on your part, or you just bait, you know, just hold very still, and the movement of the room and people around you will think they're looking at you, but they're going to be missing a lot of tells. And that actually has been the most proven successful way to hide in the open. I see a lot of guys that sit there and bluster, and they put on a poker face, and they challenge each other facially, you know, very wide open. And they miss all the little things. They miss the hair that's moving, they miss the lips, the tension in the face, moisture that gathers under the nose and so forth, and they think they're inscrutable, and they're not. If you're there, you can observe all these things.
One famous poker player, Mike Matisau, becomes really obnoxious by staring at you really, really hard, getting like 3 feet away from your face and just staring and staring and staring, which at minimum makes many people uncomfortable.
Sure, yeah.
And yet he does this. And if
so, how to deal with that?
Yeah. Well,
the first thing is, you know, I always teach try to avoid that kind of antagonistic eye contact, because, you know, I've been in the room with psychopaths, and I can tell you that no matter how tough you are, or what training you've had, or whether or not you're wearing a gun, I've been in a room where, you know, these individuals just basically have this sort of reptilian indifference, and my legs shook. There's just something about it. I'm not saying Matisau is like that, but you just never know who's going to put you on tilt. So, you know, avoid it. But if you're not, and I've been in a room where I had to stare somebody down, what usually I do is I pick something on their body that is a flaw, whether it's, you know, scars from acne, or whether, it's bad teeth. Or, you know, you can see that there's cholesterol in the rings around the eyes, that sort of bluing, yellowish color, whatever. You just pick on something on that body and you stare at it and stare at it. And what happens is these individuals will actually subconsciously get rattled, because we're all susceptible to that.
Oh, I've stared at a woman's chest before, and I didn't have that reaction at all. Anyway,
now, did she accuse you of being a
psychopath?
No, she kind of they execute U-turns rather quickly. Okay, we're talking to Joe Navarro on nonverbal communication. We're gonna have a few commercials first, and then we're coming back and talking about. He's written 10 books. We've briefly mentioned the titles to two of them. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the other 8. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Every Sunday through Wednesday in January, You earn a free spin for every $2,000 coin in on video poker or $500 coin in on slots. If you're listening live, you got 3 days left, today, tomorrow, and Sunday. A limit of 4 spins per day. Lowest prize is $750. Top prize is $300. The average has been a little over 0.5% over on the 15 days I've done it so far. They're also having a email promotion. It's too late to get on it this time. But if they have your email address, a couple times a year, they send you emails of come in and pick up some free money on the weekends of a particular month. So if you're local in Vegas or a frequent visitor, make sure they have your email address. Good things, money comes in the mail. A new semester of free video poker classes will begin tomorrow, Wednesday, January 27th at noon in the Grandview Lounge. First class, Jacks Are Better. In about a month and a half, I'll be teaching an advanced class on 8-5 bonus poker for the first time. To have a shot at getting benefit from that class, you should at least know Jacks Are Better at the intermediate level or better. At the Palms, you earn tickets for the Friday and Saturday night drawing, 7:15 p.m., prizes of $62.50 per night. You must be present to win. PFP, play for prizes until January 29th, which is this Friday. You earn Costco gift cards Monday through Friday. Cards are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 a day. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of these games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. That's the game I've been playing during this spin-to-win promotion this month. They have contests. The game of the week is Split Card Poker. This is a new game. It is 10 coins per line, where periodically you get a split card. When you get a split card, which can happen on the deal or the draw, not both, the split card has a 1 in 3 chance of being accompanied by a card one rank higher, one rank lower, or duplicate of the card itself. That is, if the card is the 6 of spades, you have an equal chance of it being the 7 of spades, the 5 of spades, or another 6 of spades. There is another pay schedule category for 5 of a kind. So far as I know, there is no commercially available software published yet to help you figure out the strategy on this game. So at the present time, you either need to create your own software or guess. I'm incapable of the first and unwilling to do the second, so currently I'm taking a pass on this game. But when that software becomes available and the games are there, it will be part of my arsenal. Next week's show, we're having two gentlemen talking about Super Bowl prop bets. Frank B. has been on the show before, and Michael Shackelford, who has a former co-host of this show, seems to take a bath every year on no safety.
Don't believe him when he says to bet the no safety.
Well, it's a good bet, but he hasn't done well on it. All right, we're going to get back to Joe Navarro now. We mentioned two of his poker books, Read 'Em and Reap and 200 Poker Tells. Seems to be you have 8 more. In general, what are those books about? How are they different than Poker Tells?
Very different. My first book I wrote with Jack Schaefer was called Advanced Interviewing Techniques, and it was really for the law enforcement community. And because this was right after 9/11, I followed it up with Hunting Terrorists. And trust me, it has nothing to do with poker. And then came Read 'Em and Reap. And then that was followed by the book that I had wanted to write for a long time, which was What Everybody Is Saying. And that book, I've been very fortunate. It is the number one selling body language book in the world. It's in 27 languages. It's in its 17th or 18th printing in 7 years. And wow. It's I run into it in bookstores all over the world. That was then followed by Louder Than Words, which was based on some lectures that I had done at business schools. And I'm not sure I'm missing anything. And then last year I came out with a book that I had really wanted to write a long time ago for people to, you know, how to deal with very difficult personalities and the personalities that cause us most harm. And that one's called just that, Dangerous Personalities. And I think somewhere in there I wrote Clues to Deceit and so forth. And I'm actually sitting on a manuscript that will come out probably in 2 or 3 years, which has approximately 400 tells. Not all poker related, but they deal with, you know, what do we see from this area of the body versus another area of the body. Like, for instance, a lot of times you'll see players pinch their cheeks, and that's a sign of psychological discomfort. But you see that in relationships, you see that elsewhere. So that one will come out, and I think that'll be it for a while. I'm going to take a break from writing, but I thought I'd get that book out there with the 400 tells and let people, you know, I always say have fun with it, experiment, test it, validate it, and if you find other things, great, and if you disagree with it, that's fine too, but at least look for it.
So the book, What Everyone's Saying, is mm-hmm. that, what does that really cover? Is that in a business setting, or is it more about, you know, like police applications, or?
So what everybody is saying is really about, well, why does your brain do what it does, right? So why is it that when you see a traffic accident or something horrific or somebody brings you bad news or you just saw your hand turn to mush, why is it that people freeze? And this has to do with, in essence, our limbic system and large cats. We, whether we were gifted this or we evolved this trait, when we see things that are really bad, or hear it or sense it, we freeze. And it doesn't matter whether you're at the table or I'm presenting a suspect, a picture of himself in a bank. You just see this this freeze response. And so the book looks at why we do the behaviors that we do. Why is it that we become territorial when we're confident and strong, and why we become submissive and small when we're not? And then it applies it to everyday life, whether you're dating or working and so forth. And then there was everybody wanted a chapter on deception. And so I clarified what we know about deception. And basically it is this: that there is no single behavior indicative of deception. There is no Pinocchio effect, as the researcher Mark Frank once told me, that there's behaviors indicative of stress or anxiety, but not the deception. And so that's what the book is about.
I'm sure a lot of listeners are wondering, have you written about nonverbal clues as it applies to men and women and dating?
You know, I've been asked so many times to do that, and I decided not to because there's actually a couple of books out there, one by David Givens called Love Signals. And after I read that book years ago, and actually I trained under David Givens, he's an anthropologist, I said, you know, there's really nothing I can contribute here. And that's the only reason that I haven't. I mean, it's that hasn't stopped other people from writing the same things that I've written about.
But I just felt I couldn't contribute to it. I may do it, you know, in the future, especially in the area of perception management and, you know, and how do you de-escalate tense situations, maybe that kind of spin on it. You know, the universal tells of courtship have been fairly much told for over and over: the enhanced eye contact, the relaxed eyes, the pupillary dilation, the vasodilation, the warming of the skin, the fronting of the ventral displays. You probably remember in the old days when people used to smoke, women while smoking at the bar would rotate their wrists so that the inside of the wrists would point to the person they liked, and then they would rotate it back the minute they didn't. I suppose, you know, we could do a chapter on things like that.
There's a website, jnforensics.com.
Yes.
JN, probably, just a guess, probably stands for Joe Navarro, just a wild guess.
You're good. Yeah, they can go there, or they can go to joenavarro.net. It's probably easier. It takes them to that website, and it has all my books and lectures and things like that. And by the way, you know, I get emails still to this day, even I haven't been teaching poker players for a while. To this day, on Twitter, I'm at Navarro Tells. I probably get an email or a Twitter question 3-4 times a day, and I try to answer every question that comes in.
Have you also written about applications for business and like negotiations?
I did. Back in 2006, Brian Hall at the Harvard Business School invited me to come out, and I've been going there every February now since 2006, and that's what led to writing Louder Than Words, which is really about business, best practices, what to do, not to do at work. You know, why a two-button business suit will get more a guy wearing it will get more loans than somebody wearing a three-button business suit. So, yeah, that's what the book's about.
Huh. Well, we've been talking with Joe Navarro. We thank you very much, Joe. We welcome your questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can send them to us at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week by signing up at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. Or to get archives of all the shows, every episode ever done, you can find those at bobdancer.com.
Very good. Joe, we hope we're going to get you back. We actually have lots more questions for you. You were extremely entertaining and informative to our guests.
Yeah, so. I could talk to you for hours, Joe.
Oh, thanks. Well, let's put it on a tickler and let's do it in 6 months, and I'd be happy to come back. You guys, you know, Bob, Richard, you guys are great, and I'd love to.
Good. It's a date. Thank you very much. Thank you, Joe, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.